Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You have a right to sleep on the street. You don't have the right to build a miniature house.
Thanks for joining us on The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and you're listening here to New York City Mayor Eric Adams.
I'm not going to have an inhumane city that allows people to live in an inhumane, dangerous environment.
Now, since taking office in January, a centerpiece of Mayor Adams' approach to the city's historic crisis of homelessness has been removing those who are most highly visible.
We're going to dismantle those encampments, give people wraparound services, voucher their goods so no one's supplies are removed from them.
Now, Mayor Adams, as you're hearing here, has presented his plan to dismantle the temporary public living spaces of the homeless as an act of humanity and a public policy which addresses concerns of both individual and public safety and health. In February, alongside New York Governor Hochul, Adams told the story of one woman seeking shelter in the city's subway system.
There's one case where woman has been living under a stairway in this system for months. It's just not acceptable. Not under my administration. That is not dignity. That is disgusting. And that's not who we are as a city.
Now, the woman Adams was describing, she has a name. She identified herself as 39-year-old Jennifer Mueller to the New York Post, and she had taken shelter in Williamsburg's Bedford Avenue L train station. In the Post interview with her, it was evident she was in need of help, and it's not clear that being given 24 to 48 hours to vacate is the help she needs, which is part of why many advocates for the homeless have decried Adams' tactics as both inhumane and ineffective. But the mayor disagrees.
I am just so amazed that we believe is dignified to allow people to live on the streets. That just shocks me. It shocks me that we believe it's all right that someone should live in a tree in the parks.
Now, it's estimated that nearly one in every 106 New Yorkers is experiencing homelessness. That's a historic high in this city of more than 8 million people. But only a small fraction of those without housing are sheltering on the city's streets. Yet clearing these highly visible examples of homelessness seems to be a cornerstone of the mayor's approach to the issue. So, what does this mean for finding permanent, sustainable solutions for those who experience homelessness in the city of New York? Brendan Cheney is the director of policy and communications for the New York Housing Conference. And Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America. Brendan, Joel, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for focusing on this.
Brendan, I want to start with language. Does your organization use the language of homeless people, people experiencing homelessness, unhoused people? What's the language?
Well, we talk about helping people who are experiencing homelessness and, in cases like this, people who are unsheltered while they're experiencing homelessness.
So why does it matter for us to shift our language in that way? Help us to understand the value in describing this problem in those particular ways.
Right. So what we want to do is we want to talk about the fact that we're talking about people. We're not categorizing them. They are people and they're in a situation and they're in a situation where they need help. And so really focusing on the language where we are addressing them as people and people that we want to offer support to.
Now, Joel, in a similar way, as we're thinking about language as our sort of first stop along this pathway here, when you hear the mayor talking about people without housing and his policies for addressing these issues, he often uses the word dignity, the word encampment to talk about these circumstances of very highly public outdoor living. How do you see that language reflecting something about what's going on with the mayor's policies?
The problem is his language is mixed and sends mixed messages, and thus their policies are mixed and send mixed messages. you know, I know him a bit. I know he cares about disadvantaged people. I know some of the people who work for him, he's brought in even better. And there's some excellent people who really care about the most powerless in our society and the most low-income people in our society. And so when he says people living on the streets, people living in a tree isn't how it should be, people deserve better, I'm like, okay, 100% there. But then he throws in, oh, well, we found hypodermic needles on their encampment. Well, we don't know if that's true. If it is true, we don't know if it's because they're substance abusers or because they have diabetes. And so his mix of rhetoric espousing compassion, which we love and which is so necessary and needed, with his mix of language sort of criminalizing people not having housing, sort of implying that they're all criminal. And much of the media, including not just the tabloids, but supposed liberal media like the New York Times, has gone along with that. That's really problematic. And that results in mixed policies that combine compassion, trying to help people get housing, with punishing people for being homeless, not only taking away their encampments, but promising to give them vouchers to keep their possessions. And it's pretty clear most of their possessions are just being trashed.
Brendan, one of the things it also seems to do to me is to really focus our attention on the proportion of people experiencing homelessness who are in fact unsheltered during that experience, who are living in these kind of highly easily visible to the public situations. But what proportion of people experiencing homelessness is that? Like, is that about half? Is it much smaller than that?
Right. In New York City, we've got, the last time they counted or estimated it, there were 2,380 people who were living unsheltered in the city. Advocates say that's probably an undercount. It's safe to say there's several thousand people that are unsheltered in New York City, but that's out of a total population or total estimate of over 68,000 people that were experiencing homelessness on a given night the last time they counted.
And where are most people? Are they in city shelters? Are they doubling up with friends and family and community members?
So this, the estimate counts only people that are living in city shelters. So, you know, if you've got 68,000 people total, it, you know, 65,000 of those are living in city shelters, and it doesn't count the number of people, which would be far more, that are doubled up or couch surfing or things like that.
Now, Joel, help me to understand how shelter beds help or don't help for this proportion of the population.
Well, it's important to note that not only are people living on the streets a small portion of those people who are homeless, but those people who are homeless are a small percentage of those people who are poor and hungry in New York City. Many people just equate hunger with homeless, when in fact there are more than a million people in New York City who live in households that can't afford enough food. So homelessness is the most dire consequence of poverty, that when you don't have enough money for food and rent and childcare, you become homeless. And we did an April Fool's press release this year. We do one every year. One is, you know, Iroquois call for expulsion of illegal immigrants. Another is conservatives call for house work requirements for WIC infants. But this year was shocking new study. When people get more food, they're less hungry. And when people get more housing, they're less homeless. And so the core of the homelessness problem is that housing isn't affordable. And when policymakers rightfully focus on that, and there's at least a little money in the new state budget to deal with this, they succeed in reducing homelessness. When they falsely imply it's all a behavior or a mental illness problem, they fail.
The mayor is saying, well, we're offering folks the opportunity to go into shelter. And according to the New York Times, the city cleared 239 encampments in just under 2 weeks last month. But only five people from those sites agreed to go into shelters. Help us understand some of the reasons why people who are experiencing homelessness might not want to relocate into a shelter.
So in New York City, there is a right to shelter, so that the city has to provide shelter for anyone who is homeless and wants to be in the shelter. So they have to have enough shelter beds, enough shelter rooms for people who are experiencing homelessness and want to be in shelter. And, you know, this sort of contrasts with a lot of other places nationally, like somewhere like Los Angeles, where, you know, if they've got 63,000 people experiencing homelessness, 46,000 are unsheltered. So we've got a different situation. And what that means is that the people in New York City that are experiencing homelessness that are unsheltered are choosing not to be in the shelter system. They're choosing to be unsheltered, in a sense. They're saying that they don't want to be in the shelter system. It might be because they feel the shelter system is unsafe. It might be because they want more privacy than the shelter system can provide. you know, might be because they want a different type of shelter. And so the city has done a good job in the past. And this is, you know, and this is good at offering shelter types that meet the needs of people who are choosing not to go into the sort of traditional shelter system, shelters that have lower thresholds and no curfews and things like that. But ultimately, what people want is housing. And so if you want people to not be living on the streets, if you feel, which we do, that it is inhumane to have people who are living unsheltered, then what you have to do is offer them what they want. And it, and that's ultimately it's housing, whether it's shelter for a short time and then housing, or just going straight from being unsheltered into housing. Housing has to be part of the solution. I think we've been disappointed in is that the mayor hasn't really made housing a part of this plan. He hasn't talked about the importance of affordable housing enough. He hasn't really made it a priority and hasn't made it a part of the plan to address homelessness.
And Joel, what does that look like? And Brendan, I'll ask you this same thing. What does it look like to actually make housing available?
Well, let me just add that one of the extra threats to homeless people in shelters has been the COVID-19 pandemic, that shelters have had very high rates of COVID. And so, we often say, well, it's an irrational decision. Someone living on the street, choosing living on the street, going into a shelter. Well, there is violence, there is privacy, and now you have COVID. So often it is a very, very rational decision to do so. And people getting housing is the most obvious answer. We do need more supportive housing. There's a little money in the state budget for that. And what that means is housing that comes with extra social services. And I just say the only people who ask whether housing is an answer to homelessness or whether being able to afford more food is an answer to hunger are people who never in a million years would experience those things. If you do worry about those things or experience them, you would never even question such a basic premise.
Brendan, let me come to you as well.
So I think there's two things. One is messaging and talking about it as part of the plan. And I think maybe not moving forward on a plan until the housing piece is a part of it, right? But it is really, when you're talking about addressing homelessness and helping people who are experiencing homelessness, it's talking about giving them housing and providing housing. And then on the policy side, it is really increasing spending on affordable housing. And we've called for the mayor to double spending on affordable housing. He agreed to it during the campaign. We're trying to hold him to that campaign promise. But it also means taking that affordable housing plan and focusing it on homelessness, focusing it on the people who are the lowest income in the city. And it means really expanding prevention programs to prevent people from experiencing homelessness. But it really means, you know, having a plan that increases resources and continues the programs and expands the programs that are really working.
Brendan Cheney is Director of Policy and Communications for the New York Housing Conference. And Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
According to the National Alliance to End Homelessness, in January of 2020, there were more than 580,000 people experiencing homelessness in the U.S. Just 2 months later, the COVID-19 pandemic roared across the country, claiming lives and shattering a once robust economy. Now, it's worth noting that those are the most recent complete numbers that are available. Because in 2021, because of the pandemic, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, waived the requirement to conduct a count of unsheltered homeless people. More on that in just a moment. But suffice it to say, in the pandemic's wake, many elected leaders are beginning to face the full-scale realities of the crisis of homelessness. With me now is Matthew Doherty. He served as executive director of the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness from 2015 to 2019, and is now an independent consultant working with states and cities to address homelessness. Matthew, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So do we know how many people in the U.S. are experiencing homelessness now on the sort of back end of this pandemic?
We really don't yet. So communities did do the kinds of point-in-time counts that you just mentioned in January and February of this year, but we don't have the data yet. And I suspect those counts are still going to be impacted by the pandemic and the challenges of performing that kind of a count, especially of unsheltered people. So I think we'll get better data, but it probably will not be the perfect data to tell us the impact of the pandemic on homelessness.
Now, we've been talking about New York City and Mayor Eric Adams, but help me to understand, you served from 2015 to 2019 as the nation's top policymaker on homelessness. What is the federal role in this, and how did that federal response differ under Presidents Obama and Trump?
Sure. So the federal role is enormous, that many of the resources that are needed to mobilize the kinds of solutions that your previous guests were speaking about, housing solutions, services solutions, really depend on robust federal investments into programs that then states and counties and cities can implement locally. And only the federal government has the scale of resources needed to address those kinds of challenges at the scale that's needed. And under the Obama administration, there were significant scaling up of investments into programs to address homelessness, especially a bipartisan support for investments into addressing veteran homelessness. Even with the Obama administration and Congress, we didn't see at that time the kind of scaling up of investments that were needed. And under the Trump administration, homelessness was not a significant priority for that administration and was not a significant focus of policy action or investments. In response to the pandemic, though, we have seen substantial investments coming into communities through the CARES Act, through the American Rescue Plan. So communities have had greater resources to respond during the pandemic.
Talk to me about some of the large cities that you've consulted with and ways that maybe we've seen some innovative or at least, you know, early successes relative to addressing this question of the unsheltered homeless.
Sure. So one of the big innovations that we saw across the country was trying to address the safety needs of people who were unsheltered or staying in shelters by creating non-congregate shelters, shelters where people have private rooms and access to be able to be safe during the pandemic. Many communities, I know New York City did as well, rented out hotels and were able to shelter people within those kinds of environments. And that was not only better for during the public health crisis, but it actually was a better option for people, and more people were willing to come inside into those kinds of environments because of the safety, the privacy, the way that those environments created a better option for them. So that was a major innovation. And then we saw communities really try to ramp up their efforts to rehouse people quickly with the kinds of resources that were coming in. But doing that during a very difficult time capacity-wise, many of the programs experienced the same kinds of challenges that every business has and has had in terms of finding employees. So it hasn't been a smooth road to implement those resources, but we have seen the kind of success at trying to turn federal resources into strong local programs, especially focused on getting people out of homelessness altogether and into housing.
Now, I know some cities have experimented with guaranteed minimum incomes, and I'm wondering if that kind of guaranteed straight cash transfer is more or less successful relative to addressing homelessness.
So I think we still probably need more research and data to demonstrate the effectiveness. But what I know works is putting people in charge of the decisions that are going to end their homelessness and keep them stable and successful, and then trying to respond to their choices about what is going to work for them. And the primary cause of homelessness is a mismatch of levels of income with the cost of housing, and the ways of shoring up people's income to make it more possible to afford housing within the kinds of housing markets we're currently experiencing is bound to be successful in helping people address that fundamental challenge of finding housing that they can afford.
Say one more beat about this idea of putting people in control of making these choices. How does that work as a policy matter?
I think it starts with listening to people and talking to people and understanding who they are, what their challenges are, what is it that they want in their lives, and what do they think is going to be successful in helping them, and then designing our programs to respond to the range of needs and wants and desires that people have. We can't treat people experiencing homelessness as a uniform block of people. They are all individuals and families with their own unique circumstances and challenges, and understanding them and then designing our programs to put them at the center leads us to more successful program design and more successful and more effective use of resources.
Matthew, pause with me for just a moment. We're going to be right back with more on this conversation about addressing homelessness. You're with The Takeaway.
The archives at Carnegie Hall hold treasures from our cultural history. In the new podcast, If This Hall Could Talk, we use these items as touchstones to explore how the past shaped the world we live in today. I'm your host, Jessica Vosk, and I'll be joined by historians, performers, cultural critics, and others to look back at the iconic venue's legendary and sometimes quirky history. If This Hall Could Talk, from Carnegie Hall and distributed by WQXR. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, all, it's MHP back with you on The Takeaway, and we're talking with Matthew Doherty, who is former executive director of the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. So, Matthew, let's talk about the New York policy, which is one we've seen in other cities. Does forcible removal of homeless encampments work in terms of moving people towards shelters?
No, forcible removal does not work. It traumatizes people further. It makes it less likely they will trust the people who are trying to help and serve them. It disperses them into other neighborhoods, but it doesn't actually help put people on a path to housing. So the solutions to encampments in our communities is finding solutions for the people who are living there. And that fundamentally means linking people to opportunities to access housing that they can afford with the services that are going to help them be successful.
Now, you've talked a bit about, each individual, each family being treated as individuals, listening carefully. But are there ways that we understand anything about broad demographics? So the ways that the experience of homelessness is more likely to affect immigrant communities, African-American communities, women, queer and trans folk. What do we know about those things?
Yeah, there are profound inequities in who experiences homelessness in our country. Profound racial inequities, with especially Black and Indigenous populations much more likely to experience homelessness, LGBTQ youth especially much more likely to experience homelessness. So while the challenges people face are individual and the solutions they need are individual, the causes are truly systemic and result from a wide variety of policies and conditions within our communities that inequitably impact people.
Are there any cities that you hold up as models, for example, for really addressing youth homelessness among LGBTQ folk?
There are some very strong examples of that. And San Francisco has some extremely strong programs for serving LGBTQ youth. The federal government, that is one area in which the federal government has been scaling up investments through the Youth Homelessness Demonstration Program. So there are communities across the country right now who have new resources to test and find new solutions for addressing homelessness among young people, including LGBTQ young people.
Now, you mentioned safety a bit earlier. Often when we hear safety, it seems to be about keeping the public safe from those who are experiencing homelessness. Is that where the broadest safety concern is?
No, people experiencing homelessness are much more likely to be impacted by crime and violence than people who are housed and are less likely to cause violence than to experience violence themselves. I think when we think about people who are unsheltered and creating the solution that we all want to see for that challenge, we can't focus on the needs of people who are walking by people who are unsheltered. We have to focus on the needs of the people who are unsheltered themselves and figure out the solutions that are going to help them. And then that creates the solution for the entire community.
Are there any market incentives for creating this kind of affordable housing for those with the greatest number of challenges? Or is this a government-only kind of incentive?
The market alone won't create these solutions, so that does require public funding to make sure that housing is affordable enough for people who are at risk or experiencing homelessness. We should be hoping to create enough housing that people won't fall into homelessness, but we also need to create the dedicated units that people can exit homelessness into, and that requires public funding in order to make it affordable enough, and we need to wrap around the kinds of services that people need and want in order to be successful.
Matthew Doherty is former executive director of the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness and an independent consultant working to address homelessness. Matthew, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for the conversation.